Okay, to use the terminology on fair game, question. You're going to embarrass me. Okay, to use the terminology on fair game, question. What happened to Quentin Hubbard? He was found in a car in Las Vegas with a hose going from the tailpipe into the car. He's taken to a hospital, and a GO agent, one of my clients now, was sent in to steal some of the medical records pertaining to the initial findings. Those records ended up, as Kima Douglas would tell you, in the hands of the GO with Mary Sue and Ron. The issue was whether or not, I think through in the minds of many people, whether he was drugged. There's a drug called Pavilion Curare, which paralyzes the musculature system, which is breaks down in the human body. It's virtually undetectable. And if you gave a person a 1 15-milligram dose, it's totally paralyzed you without probably killing you for a while because your involuntary breathing apparatus would probably continue. So the question became was, you know, whether he was drugged. It's never been resolved. The records were taken. Among the things that were found, there was found sperm in his rectum. And there was a lot of inner, higher level discussions as to what to do about that, because that would not be good PR if that got out. And to this day, the mystery of Quentin is another mystery that we are trying to unfold. We make little progress here and there. We get a girl who's willing to come forward and say, yeah, I was sent in to steal the records. We make a little progress by having another one say, I was sent in to steal a topology report. So to this day, it's a mystery. The question that we have in our minds is, why? You know, why do you do that? If Quentin was homosexual, he was homosexual. If Quentin killed himself, he killed himself. If someone else killed him, then you try to find out who. But why do you play those games? That's what we're trying to find out. Why do you, for years, inevitably, unendingly, play these games to distort and hide the facts? That's all I can tell you. Well, when I started, I had a considerable amount of money. I just built just to give you some ideas, I'm not going to give you my whole financial picture, but I'm not the president, I don't have to do that, but I'll tell you this. I just built a $225,000 home. I had just bought a $475,000 office condominium. This is right at the time I'm getting involved in 1979. I'd won some very, very large cases and received some very, very large fees. And I had engaged in a lot of very heavy-duty litigation, very onerous litigation, trials that lasted 3 months, sequestered jury trials, some of the longest sequestered jury trials in Massachusetts history. So I earned a lot of money. And I spent almost all of that to this date. I spent borrowed, in some instances, from some relatives. And that's basically where it comes from. And I intend to go on fighting this battle, and I intend to raise the funds to do it however I have to. And that's the answer.
Yes, I agree with you totally.
My cases have got nothing to do with faith. They have nothing to do with religious doctrine. They've got to do with things like promises of confidentiality.
You don't know that. You don't know who is playing the game and who hasn't played the game. That's an arbitrary thing. It's not something that we can legally. And it is not the game, and the promises were kept for many people in Scientology. I, including many others, in certain areas.
Good.
I
agree with you. I thought I created that dichotomy.
I think the idea that you're saying that they made promises they couldn't keep in front of that psychiatric
person. Promises of confidentiality.
Yes,
is a concrete promise. It's got nothing to do with whether you're going to go to heaven. It apparently had to do with taking the legal structure and trying to use the legal structure to interpret ultimate questions of faith and religiosity, and the fact that those ultimate questions cannot be confronted in the legal arena. Is that a fair statement? I agree with you.
Well, I'm taking into consideration that we all may be part of the black male.
What?
Okay, taking into consideration that we may all at one time be part of the black male due to the fact that many of us have been in the process. How do we get our folders
back? Mm-hmm. How do you get your folders? Well, put it this way. I'm 4 years downstream, and I'm still working at it. In every case where we've litigated the right for you to have your folders, we've won. The ultimate issue as to who owns the folders, in other words, we've been able to get the folders pending the litigation. The ultimate issue as to who owns the folders has not yet been resolved because none of the cases are over with yet. They're all pending. So the answer is the only way to get your folders is to bring a lawsuit and demand them. In the same way, for the most part, right, in light of what I know right now to address your question of money, the church is inundated with refund and AP claims right now, advanced payment claims. And as some of you probably heard, the Miami org was foreclosed upon last week. Now, what's going to happen in connection with that foreclosure, I don't know. I spoke to the lawyer on the phone. The lawyer represented, his name is Clark. He lives in Miami, if anyone wants to contact him. And he represented the mortgagee, the people holding the mortgage. And they didn't pay their mortgage. So they foreclosed on this office building in Miami. Now, whether it's going to be redeemed, in most states, the mortgagor has an opportunity to come in and redeem. But it's very, very unusual, as those of you who own homes would know, to allow a foreclosure to go to the point of it actually being in the newspapers and at public auction.
Is it true that the church is going to go into receivership?
Rumors abound. The quality of the size, the quantity of demands being made by people who paid huge amounts of money for this organization is escalating dramatically. A lot of them are calling me, that's how I know. And a lot of them are calling governmental agencies. That level of financial demand, in light of dwindling revenues, but more importantly, maybe in light of, and I say maybe because I don't have the data, I don't know for sure, maybe in light of the fact that the Sea Org reserves are unavailable to Miscavige. The Sea Org reserves may only be controlled by Hubbard. We're not sure. We simply don't know. Bill Franks says that he controlled three bank accounts in Liberia, Liechtenstein, and Luxembourg with $150 million in Sea Org reserves. Whether the Sea Org reserves can be used to satisfy these claims and whether they're being used to pay this army of lawyers right now, we don't know. We kind of think that they're not, which means that they won't be used to pay refunds and they won't be used to pay advance payments, which means that the church would have to get it out of operating revenues. It can't do it. Just the demands I know about and the sizes, it couldn't possibly get them out of operating revenues. And that one definition of insolvency is the inability to meet your expenses as a crew. If someone has, if some unknown mysterious person has control of the Sea Org reserves, and they're never going to be used to satisfy the literally millions of dollars that are coming through my office right now in way of demands, then I don't know what's going to happen. But we're getting all kinds of information in about the fact that they're contemplating receivership. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask Mr. Gerdy the question of the proprietary for validity of every signature that assignments and so forth. It's been a matter of record since 17 October that the RTC owns this signature name as a copyright for up to the trademark application. Has that point been addressed in court, to your knowledge?
Yeah, that legal point wouldn't have to do with filing a legal declaration under oath. If they have the right to sign his name as part of a like a Xerox copy insignia or representation of his signature on a document, that's what that trademark right to use his name refers to. It has nothing to do with the legal requirement that a person signing a legal document, such as an affidavit, under the pains and penalties of perjury, as he purportedly did, has to personally sign it and read it.
Assignment to use the name to give them the assignment.
Yeah, one, it's apples and oranges. One's got nothing to do with the other. Yeah. They're totally different.
Right.
The idea of his signature being on that legal declaration has got nothing to do with the trademark rights of RTC to put his signature on some type of a publicized document.
I'd like to ask about the graduation from Columbia College and/or the business medical history. Have these been documented, the crews by the agencies themselves received no employees back the next day of next year who did not graduate as per the CRDA? Yes.
The documents that we not only have documents from the original agencies. We've also got, as Terry knows, we've got his own, here's his transcript from George Washington University. We've got his own documents. The documents that were collected and held by him for years in his own handwriting. His own naval records, talking original naval records that belong to him. Those are among the things in the Armstrong archives. The level of documentation that exists to prove L. Ron Hubbard's background, I can only tell you as a trial lawyer who reviews evidence all the time to determine its authenticity, reliability, accuracy, etc., is overwhelming. I mean, it's simply overwhelming. I mean, I've got all this fitness reports, qualifications as an officer, log books on some of the ships he was on. It's overwhelming. That's all I can tell you. And if you want to come to my office or start looking through it, you're welcome to.
Sir, I'd like to know, regardless of everything that has come down the river on the subject of Scientology, I'd like to know, supposing we all decided to form a democratic corporation and call ourselves the Church of Scientology, okay, could we then ask for an accounting of every dime and dollar that has been spent by the RTC?
Absolutely.
What do we have to do to make that happen?
All you have to do is get a group together and hire a local lawyer here in Los Angeles, and no mean task, right?
How many people are necessary to form this corporation?
Technically, to bring the suit for the accounting, you probably only need one. But the more people you have, and the more who are in executive positions, the better off you would be from an evidentiary point of view. But absolutely, there are loads of cases where church groups have been involved in litigation where one faction in the church has demanded an accounting from another faction in the church.
Okay. I'd like to make one statement. Anybody here that wants to do that, I've got a tag right here with your name, address, phone number, and tell your friends. You got that?
Yeah.
Thank you.
In 1978, I was forced by an ethics officer at the Celebrity Center in Los Angeles to write up every overage that I had ever given up in a confidential lottery session and put them in an affidavit form to be used against me and restoring my family's business in Texas.
That's per policy.
Per policy.
Right. That's a B1 policy.
It was put in a B1 file, and I was told that if I ever decided to leave the church or mention what had happened, it would be used. And then, after I got declared, the rest started. Is there anything that I can do about, you know, other than make a better affidavit to say that, you know, the things that I didn't do? I mean, this guy said, well, that isn't enough. You have to do da-da-da-da-da.
I've heard this for years from 500 people.
So what do you do?
You do what I'm doing. You sue them to get your files back. You go to the Attorney General here in Florida, you go to a governmental agency and you complain. You hire a lawyer. You fight back, is what you do. You group together with other people and you fight back. Can you get them? Absolutely, you can get them.
Yes. Last Christmas, there was a text message which was supposedly Ron Boyd. Was the voice-print analysis ever made on the tape and compared with the tape that was known to be from Ron?
They did, we didn't. The reason we didn't bother is because we didn't think that the evidentiary posture of the case, it would have cost us X number of dollars to do it. They've got millions to do it, and we don't. So we didn't do it because, and it turns out it was irrelevant. It didn't make any difference whether it was his or it was not his. So we didn't pursue it for that reason. So I don't know whether it was his or was not his. I've had people who, you know, supposedly worked with him for years say, no way. And I've had other people say, yeah, they think it sounds like him, or at least parts of it sound like him. It was a tape recording, a New Year's message from Ron. Which, by the way, sounded great. I mean, you know, new revitalization and discovery. You know, I mean, that's what we're all searching for. Problem is living it.
It's a very vast, like corporate structure worldwide within the church, which stands with a company called Hubbard Association of Scientologists International, which was supposed to have been disbanded in favor of the Hubbard Quality, Hubbard of Scientology, and these groups in discussion. Now, there has been anyone attempted to develop a corporate
structure 3 to show the accounting corporate structures associated within each other and where they got the funds from, who provided the funds, and who said they could have those funds to start with.
If your question is, has an investigation been done to unlock the interlocking corporate structure? Yes, to some degree. And in terms of the modern day corporate structure, to a great degree, and it's been pretty much documented. In terms of the origins of the church and where the money came from, it came from people, as Jerry knows from the documents that he's gotten, from talking to people who were there at the time, like Bob Thomas and a lot of other people who I met someone, Evan Parker, I believe his name was, today, who started in 1950 or something. Evan Farmer, maybe it was.
Barber.
People like that would know, as is documented in the Armstrong documents, it was very simple. People read Dianetics, the Modern Science of Mental Health, where claims were made for the cure of diseases, as you know, and people, desperate people, wanting to be cured, began to pay money to Hubbard to do it. Now, in terms of the original corporate papers, most of them are in the Armstrong documents, sitting right there, the original, and they trace the origins of the organizations and the correspondence from Hubbard to people like Mrs. O'Brien, etc. They trace the origins of the church. They document the resignations of officers and directors all in advance as demanded by Hubbard, and they document to some degree the constant flow of funds and control by Hubbard.
Well, it has been rumored that although David Mayo has been expelled from the church, he has not had his resignation, although we understand that the resignation was being signed in advance from the RPC. We understand nevertheless that has not been revoked. Is there any particular reason why that
would
not have happened?
I don't know. I've heard about David Mayo, but I don't know. I don't know the answer to your question. I should give someone else. Go ahead.
What is the success rate on because Geo has been saying recently that they're winning like crazy.
I read the October 17th. The question is, what's happening in the courts, and is the GO telling the truth? Are they winning like crazy, and are we losing, etc.? The church has brought 10 suits against me to date, and my colleagues, and 7 have been dismissed. I have brought about 21 suits on behalf of about 30 people, excluding the missing persons case, which is an altogether different case, and none of them have been dismissed. Every major motion we have won. Major motions are motions to dismiss, motions for summary judgment. Now, in the Van Schaik suit, which was originally brought on 1 of 14 counts as a class action on one count called a RICO count. For a lot of legally technical reasons, the RICO stands for Racketeering Influenced Corrupt Organizations Act. It's a federal statute. We wanted to test the waters with that statute. And for a very technical legal reason, that one count was knocked out. But that, when a person brings a lawsuit, that's very common. You might bring a lawsuit with 10 counts in it. By the time you get to trial, you take the Hare Krishna suit that was recently tried. I think the jury came in on 2 counts, false imprisonment and outrageous conduct, I think they were. When that suit started, there might have been 20 counts. And the normal procedure in the law is that you bring a case with a lot of different counts, and they gradually get knocked out as the case goes on. In the Van Schaik suit, that RICO count got knocked out. But it got knocked out because the judge ruled that the definition of the term enterprise in person within the statute may or may not be, have been satisfied in differentiating between whether Hubbard was the person or the enterprise or the church corporation, Church of Scientology California, Inc., was the enterprise or the person. It was a highly technical reason. And we could have replayed it. But the fact of the matter is, no suit has been dismissed. We have won all the major motions. Where they have wins, where they have succeeded, is they've succeeded in delay. Their major victory, if you want to give them that, is they've succeeded in delaying, obfuscating, and obstructing our getting to a trial. They've just got armies of lawyers filing mountains of pleadings to prevent the cases from being tried. But in no case have any of our suits been knocked out, and 7 of the 10 to date have been knocked out, and 2 others against me are just about to be knocked out. It's just a question of time. Go ahead. Next.
What is the current status of the NIMBY, that being pursued, and also, I thought that would force our number of public appearance, but it was able to get away with a written document. Is there any way to force the public appearance?
Absolutely, eventually. The question is, what is the status of the DeWolf proceeding in the Riverside Probate Court? And secondly, can L. Ron Hubbard's attendance be compelled at trial? Or in any legal proceeding? Hubbard was able to sidestep the DeWolf proceeding by filing a legal declaration. A lot of the evidence that we had, I can't go into because it's under seal. The evidence is unbelievable in terms of financial manipulations and a whole series of transactions that have been conducted and things that have been done, lies, under oath, caught in where Mary Sue Hubbard and others were caught in lies. The problem is, the case was very narrow in a legal perspective. What is L. Ron Hubbard a missing person? Well, he filed a legal declaration. And in the legal declaration, he said that his affairs are being handled by Office Services, Inc. And I'm not missing. I'm just in seclusion. Well, you know, he calls it seclusion. There are a lot of people looking for Mr. Hubbard. And the fact of the matter, one federal judge in Florida, in the Tonya Burden case, Judge Krentzman, has ruled that L. Ron Hubbard is concealing himself. Ruled, a written order of the court, which I have with me, that he's concealing himself to avoid process. Well, he sidestepped the missing person issue by filing the declaration, which the judge chose to accept. It's a close call as to whether he should have. And I'm not going to second-guess the judge, but he did it. However, it is now proved, we're going to accept that ruling. L. Ron Hubbard is not missing. His affairs are being conducted by Office Services, Inc. They're his authorized business agents. They're the people, if you want to serve process on, you serve them. So now we're going to proceed in our lawsuits and with some new lawsuits by pursuing Mr. Hubbard through Office Services, Inc. I should get some other people who have. This fellow's been... The church message is, the church PR line, is that he's in seclusion because he's been a great benefactor to society, and he's worked all his life to help society, and at his age he deserves some seclusion, and He's in total control of everything. He's in full health, which is a total fabrication. But the PR line that L. Ron Hubbard is in good health is totally fabricated. There are documents in the Armstrong documents, as Jerry knows, where he's written letters as recently as 78 saying things like, this is not desirable public knowledge. My health is failing. I suffer from embolism, chronic viral pneumonia, things like that. It's a total fabrication that he's in good health. If he's alive, he's in very, very bad health. There was no witness. Signatures are unwitnessed. And we have tried to find out, you know, who witnessed them. And the people who would have had access to him, Ann Broker, Pat Broker, and David Miscavige, we can't find. We can't get them. We can't serve them with process to get them in a deposition to depose them and say, have you seen him? Tell us the truth. What's his health? So his overall status is a mystery, but the church's PR line is that he's in seclusion of his own will. Well, if we get a federal court order saying that he's hiding. And as you know, L. Ron Hubbard wrote an article called The Criminal Mind in terms of how criminals hide and don't confront. Well, if there was one point where confrontation would be called for, if there's one point in the history of his organization, of his dealings with people, his own wife going to prison, and he's been married to her since 1952, if there was one point where confrontation would be called for, with his own wife going to prison, maybe for his own misdeeds, you'd think that he'd come forward at this point in time, but he won't. Yeah, exactly what the Brokers and Miscavige are doing, who knows? There's been a lot of new information coming to us that suggests that the situation warrants serious scrutiny.